The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, Frank Morgan stars in the fabulous Dr. Tweedy from 1947. We'll also hear two classic radio dramas with episodes of The Goldbergs and Aunt Mary. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, two classic radio dramas with episodes of The Goldbergs and Aunt Mary. Right now, Frank Morgan stars in the fabulous Dr. Tweedy from 1947 as WMKY presents The Golden Age of Radio.
Dr. Tweedy, written by Robert Riley Crutcher with Harry Bonzell and starring Frank Morgan. Thaddeus Q. Tweedy, Doctor of Philosophy and Dean of Men at Potts College, is a devotee of the bassoon. It is a musical instrument which is extremely difficult to play. Dr. Tweedy's old English sheepdog, Baldy, wishes it were impossible.
Baldy, stop beating your head against the wall. My bassoon playing isn't that bad. And stop sneering. You look almost human. Now, you sit here beside my chair, and I'll play you some beautiful music. Now, listen. Well, Baldy, you're singing. Well, Baldy, you can sing. You're a singing dog. Let's try shortening bread. Who's Nelson Eddy? I can see it now. The Metropolitan Opera Company presents Caruso Baldy. With all that hair, you'll be perfect for the Barber of Seville. Why, Miss Kitty Bell and Colonel Jackson, won't you come in?
Thank you, Dr. Tweedy. My brother Beauregard and I are so excited about your marvelous idea for forming a little old musical group. But we were talking about it while Beauregard was having his mint julep. He's had only one. He's turning over a new leaf.
Yeah, I know. A mint leaf.
Dr. Tweedy, Sam, I purchased a new set of mint julep glasses.
Yeah?
They're 2 feet tall.
My, one of those and you don't have to hunt for a lamppost. You just lean against the glass.
A delightful drink, sir. While making it, you drop in a mint leaf every 6 inches.
Oh.
And when the 2-foot glass is full of that delectable fluid, you dust just a suggestion of powdered sugar over the top.
Oh, dear.
And then when you drink it down, you know you're really living.
Yeah. And everyone else thinks you're dead.
Well, that's the nicest way I can think of to go. And if I go, I can take it with me.
Dr. Tweedy, it's going to be so much fun having these little musical evenings. I just love classical music. My favorite composers are Rachmaninoff, Prokofiev, Tchaikovsky, Rimsky-Korsakov, Shostakovich, Stravinsky, Mussorgsky, and Hoagie Carmichael. What are you going to call your little old musical group?
The Tweedy Chamber Music Society. Now, let's bring in Miss Kitty Bell's harp from the porch. Mrs. Apopoulos will be here any minute with her flute.
Hmm. My, it's dark out here.
Yes, my porch light is burned out. Yes. Look out, Colonel. The harp. Your nose. You're...
Well, the harp's out of tune, but my nose is a perfect C sharp.
Now, Dr. Treat, if you'll sound your A, Beauregard will tune up his silver cornet.
Great Scott, that mint julep. I shouldn't have drunk the last 4 inches.
Yes. Well, Colonel, the wind from your cornet is tarnishing my bassoon. Would you mind blowing the other way? Now, let's tune up. 1, 2, 3.
How's everything, kiddo? Here's the populace with her hot flute. Let's jam up the joint.
Jam the joint?
Well, certainly, twiddle my twiddle. I love to toodle my floodle.
Yeah. Well, notice how much my bassoon playing has improved in the last few weeks.
Sweetle, cutie dumpling, what a sweet bassoon you've got. That's gorgeous.
Well, I haven't started playing yet. My finger got caught in the valve. Now, Mrs. Poplar, sound your A.
I'm all puckered up and ready to let fly. Yeah. Stand back, Sweetle, or you'll get a shower bath.
Oh, dear, Mrs. Poplar, I'm afraid you're flat.
Now, wait a minute, sport, not so fast. A populace has got perfect pitch.
Yes, of course you have. And you have a delightful tremolo.
Well, see, little Tootsie, keep talking. I love it.
Mr. Poplar, did you notice that you have several full notes here?
Notes to you, too. Let's play.
Yes, well. Well, the first rehearsal of the Tweedy Chamber Music Society has come to an end.
Thank heavens.
Welby, I didn't see you standing there. Where's Baldy?
Out in the backyard. He dug a hole and buried his head in it.
How is he breathing?
Doc, if I knew that, I'd have buried my head, too.
Oh, dear. Poor Baldy. I'll have to get him some earmuffs like you're wearing.
Oh, Doc, I come in to tell you Mr. Potts is at the back door.
Oh, well, thank you, Welby. I'll go see what he wants. Good evening, Mr. Potts.
Sweetie, yes? I came to see you because I have a big problem on my hands.
How is Mrs. Potts?
Who cares?
I don't know.
This is a new problem.
Yes?
Tweedy, it's my duty as chairman of the Board of Trustees to see to it that we have a good basketball team.
Yes.
3 weeks ago, we suffered a very humiliating defeat at the hands of Bullfinch.
Oh, but our boys put up a great fight. Once they even got the ball. I thought it was a moral victory. We held them down to 85 points. To our nothing.
This morning, the Army discharged one of the finest basketball players in the country. This afternoon, he enrolled here. Tomorrow night, Bullfinch will get a big surprise.
They will?
Yes. Dribble! Oh, Dribble, come over here.
Oh, no! That's the biggest surprise I've ever seen. What is it? Who is it?
Tweedy, this is Dribble Jones. Dribble Jones stands 7 feet 2 inches in his stocking feet.
And when he plays, he wears built-up tennis shoes. Dribble, this is Dr. Tweedy.
Where?
Here I am, down here.
Oh, down there. Hi, Dr. Seedy.
It's Tweedy. Thaddeus Q, Ph.D., Dean of Men.
Tweedy, yes. I want Dribble to stay here with you until the game tomorrow night.
Yes.
Take good care of him and see to it that nothing happens to Dribble.
No.
We can't win without him.
Don't you worry, Mr. Potts. I'll take care of everything. He can double up with Sidney in his role. He'll have to double up. Nothing is going to happen to Dribble.
Well, if anything does happen to him, you'll have me to face.
Oh, what a horrible thought.
Yes, well, keep it in mind, Tweedy.
Yes.
Good night.
Good night,
Dribble.
Good night.
Don't worry about the game, Mr. Potts. It's in the bag.
Yeah.
There'll be good news tomorrow night.
Yes. Well, good night. Where's your luggage, Dribble?
Well, I've got this basketball. I'm a dribbling fool.
Say, that looks like fun. Let me try bouncing it.
Sure. Here's the ball, Dr. Petey.
Well, the name is Tweedy. Is this the way you do it? Ow!
Hey, that's pretty tricky dribbling. I never saw anybody bounce it with his face before.
Well, I didn't mean to. Now we'll pretend the front of the garage there is the basket. Now just watch me sink this shot, Dribble. The garage moved. Where'd the ball go?
It's over there.
Yes.
In the second-story window box next door.
Oh. I could ring the doorbell and tell Mrs. Popolis there's a basketball in a flower box. Oh, no. I guess it's late. Boost me up, Dribble.
Ouch! Dr. Didi, you're standing on my ears.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll step down to your shoulders. Here's the basketball nestled in the dead petunias.
Sweetle, my sweetle, the second story man.
No, I don't. Good evening, Mrs. Apopolis. I thought you were in bed.
How romantic. Chasing at each other through the dead petunias.
Well, it's a bit embarrassing. You see, I was looking for a basketball, believe it or not.
Oh, don't make excuses, Tweedle Ditchy Witchy. I love it. Just like Romeo and Juliet. You're kidding yourself on my balcony. What are you standing on?
A tall friend of short acquaintance.
I'm coming, Mrs. Apopolis.
Oh, Tweedle, I heard some noises and called Colonel Jackson. I didn't know it was you out there. Oh, how sad. You're looking at an unhappy Greek.
You're looking.
Oh, he's coming with dueling pistols to save me.
So long, Dr. Weedy.
No, Dribble, don't run away. Don't leave me hanging here. Oh, I'm hanging here.
Don't worry, Mr. Popolis. I'll kill all four of those men hanging from your window.
Four men? Oh, no. He's had another 2-footman julep. Balls of fire!
Before Frank Morgan continues, here is...
Thank you.
back to Frank Morgan as the fabulous Dr. Tweedy. Last night, things were pretty much up in the air, including Dr. Tweedy. Today, Dr. Tweedy's manservant, Welby Skinkle, is telling his very dear friend, the houseboy at the Phi Beta Quota fraternity house, all about it.
Boy, Timothy, I want to tell you about last night. As soon as I finished the ironing, I rushed right over here to the maternity house.
Sit down, Welby, and tell me all the juicy details.
Yeah, okay, but I can only stay a minute. There was more... Hey, what are you doing with them long needles?
I'm knitting myself a sweater. So I'll be warm and cozy when we go out to play in the snow.
Yeah, well, you got the perfect shape for a sweater, too. Well, let me tell you about last night. I hear someone yelling. I rushes out, and there was the doc hanging from Mrs. Apopoulos's window box on the second floor.
Oh, heavens to Betsy. Go on.
Well, Colonel Jackson is shooting off his dueling pistols, and the doc was scared stiff.
Oh, mercy. I'd be scared, too.
Yeah, well, he wasn't scared of the colonel. That Mrs. Apopoulos was trying to drag him in the window.
Oh, nuts. I got so excited I dropped a stitch.
I didn't hear nothing.
Well, I dropped it.
Okay.
But that's enough of this gossip. We've got work to do.
What?
Mr. Potts wants you and me to guard the athletic trophies in the administration building. He's afraid the bullfinches will swipe them before the big game tonight.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Like they done 3 weeks ago.
Ah.
Well, let's get going. I got my wheelbarrow parked in front of a fire plug. I don't want to get no ticket.
Well, B, we can stop for some refreshments on the way.
Yeah. It's cold out.
And just in case those bullfinches try to steal any trophies tonight, here's our baseball bat.
Oh, boy, give me that bat. Let me show you what I do to one of them guys. Here, turn your head a little bit.
Hmm?
Don't move. That's right. That's it.
Well, what are you waiting for? Go ahead and hit me on the head.
I just... Oh, nuts. Timothy, I just bopped you.
Oh. Now it's my turn to pretend I'm defending the trophies.
Yeah.
And the first one that yells out is a sissy. Stick out your hand.
Well, look at me bounce. It must be them rubber heels I'm wearing. Yeah, well, now it's my turn, Timothy. Here. Hold your head still. Now.
Do you hear that little bird singing, Welby? I'm a nature lover. I'm crazy about birds.
Birds? I'm getting a little headache. Must have been something I ate. But I don't hear no birds.
Turn your head a little bit more and you will.
Yeah. Timothy, now that's beautiful. Can you see the boy?
Now I see nothing but stars. Let's practice defending the trophy some more.
Yeah, okay, I love them, boy.
Yeah.
Sitting at the front door waiting for me to come home. What have you been doing? Oh, yes. Well, it's late and Sydney isn't home yet. I'd better turn on the lights in the living room.
Dr. Tweedy!
Whoops, Mary and Sydney. I'm sorry. Sydney, your nose is bleeding. Oh, no, it's lipstick. What are you two doing sitting in the dark?
Well, you see, Dr. Tweedy, I got this wristwatch for Christmas.
Yes?
It has a radium dial you can see in the dark, and Sydney and I wanted to see what time it was.
Oh, well, what time is it?
Gee, where's Dr. Tweedy?
We were talking.
Well, I didn't hear anything. I must have come in during a lull in the conversation.
Well, what we were talking about was, a couple of weeks ago, the kids from Bolton Shoe stole our athletic trophies, and we're afraid they'll try it again tonight.
I remember how mad that made Mr. Potts the last time. Why don't you two go get them and bring them here for safekeeping?
Gee, Dr. Tweedy, aren't Mary's lips beautiful? Would you mind turning off the lights on your way out, Dr. Tweedy?
Oh, yes. Would you mind turning off the lights on your way out, Dr. Tweedy? We only have an hour before the basketball game starts.
Yes, I understand. You have so much to talk over. I'll get Dribble to bring the trophies over here. Dribble, is that you out there in the garage?
Yes, Dr. Tweedy.
Well, what
I'm
do you
playing
do?
With a little gopher, you know, the school mascot.
Oh, that's little Philbert, the gopher. How are you tonight? Yeah, you like being out of your cage, don't you, Philbert?
Oh, boy!
Isn't he a cute little rascal? Come here, Philbert. Ow!
He bit you.
I know it. He always bites you. Oh, look, now he's sorry. He's licking the wound. Ow! He bit me again.
Let me hold him.
Yeah, but keep him away from your basketball. He might chew it. He might bite the... He bit it. Oh, dear, where's Philbert? Oh, there you are. Blew you right back in your cage. That'll teach you to keep your big buck teeth out of basketball. Basketball game, athletic trophies, dribble. I want you to go over to the administration building, get the athletic trophies, and bring them here. I want to be sure nobody steals them.
But what if somebody thinks I'm stealing them? I'm new around here.
Yeah, well, there won't be anyone guarding those athletic trophies. That's why I want to lock them up in my garage. Just be very careful and don't get into any trouble. We need you to win that basketball game.
Those trophies are as good as in the garage right now, Dr. Needy.
Good. And I'm not needy, I'm seedy. I'll meet you at the game.
All right, gang, we'll show those little fingers who's going to win this basketball game. Let's start off with a pop skyrocket.
Got Philbert the gopher in his new uniform. Yellow jersey and purple trunks with a hole for the tail. And little tiny tennis shoes.
Take him away. Have you seen Dr. Tweedy?
Sure, Mr. Potts. There he is coming in on the other side of the gym.
Oh.
Dr. Tweedy!
Yes, did you hear that, Mr. Potts? They cheered me when I came in.
Are you sure it wasn't the bullfinch cheering section, Tweedy?
What a thrill, Mr. Potts. Tonight we win our first basketball game at last. Potts triumphant.
Yes. This is a great day for Potts and a personal triumph for me.
That's right.
I was shrewd enough to enroll Dribble Jones. Mm. And tonight those bullfinch kids won't steal our athletic trophies again.
No, I've seen to that.
No, I've seen to that.
Yes.
I ordered Welby and Timothy to stand guard over them. And you know what they'd do to anyone who tried to take them.
Yeah.
They've each got a baseball bat.
They have? Oh. They've each got a baseball bat. And I sent Dribble Jones over there. Oh, no!
Tweedy! You didn't!
Yes, you'd be surprised. I did.
My brand new tall center.
Yes,
sir. After they get through with him with those baseball bats, he'll be a foot shorter. Yes.
Excuse me, Dr. Tweedy. Will you hold Philbert? I have to help Mary lead the next cheer.
Yes. Oh, dear. What'll I do with him? Here. Philbert, get into this big wooden box.
Tweedy, this is too much. I can't stand anymore.
Well, sit down, Mr. Potts.
Hey, Potts, Pebble! We want Dribble.
Here comes Dribble now, and he's as tall as he was before.
Hi, Dr. Seedy. Those trophies are safe in your...
your garage, and I'm sorry I'm a little late, because I stopped to watch a couple of guys standing beside the trophies beating each other over the heads with baseball bats and talking about birds.
Oh, dear. Welby and Timothy play so rough.
They didn't even seem to be taking the trophies.
Never mind, Tweety. Give Dribble a ball and let's start the game.
Certainly, Mr. Potts. Nothing can happen now to stop this game. Where are the basketballs?
They're all in that box right there.
In there? Yes. In that box? Well, we'll take one out. And in that big wooden box?
Yes.
But I put Philbert the gopher in there. He bites basketballs. Oh, no. Oh, no. I've done it again.
This
is a Opopolis. You brought it.
Yes, your basketball. You left it in my flower box last night.
Oh, Mrs. Opopolis, I could kiss you.
Well, let's have it, Tweedle, my Tweedle. Buck her up.
Oh, no.
Frank Morgan will be back in just a minute. But first, here is... Morgan appears by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of the Technicolor musical Till the Clouds Roll By. Here again is Frank Morgan with his thought for the week.
My topic for today is horses. Fast horses, that is. But no horse can go as fast as the money you bet on them. Which brings me to my thought for the week. Bulls and bears aren't responsible for nearly as many stock losses as bum steers. Oh, dear. Good night.
Frank Morgan Show came to you from Hollywood. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
You're listening to The Golden Age of Radio with the fabulous Dr. Tweedy, starring Frank Morgan, first broadcast on radio on January 8th, 1947. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When the golden age of radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, an episode of the radio drama Aunt Mary. But first, here's an episode of The Goldbergs, first broadcast on radio on May 21st, 1941, as WMKY presents The Golden Age of Radio.
And now, The Goldbergs. The world always has more surprises for us than we expect. And the world of the Goldbergs has had many surprises for them recently. Now that they know that Sammy is broken with Sylvia, now that Jake and Molly know what Sammy thinks of this girl who ruined everyone and everything she touched, the whole family is anxious to leave Carolina as soon as they can and get back home to Lastonbury. As far as the family is concerned, it's only a question of packing, leaving, and perhaps regretting. But people do not relinquish the claims of the heart so easily, as we'll all soon see. Listen.
Molly, when I tell you the apple don't fall far from the tree, I know what I was talking about. Show me the tree, and I'll tell you what fruit to expect.
All right, Jake, please. Maybe Allison didn't hung up on the telephone on you.
He did, Molly.
All right, so maybe he's nervous, too. His family told him everything, so he's nervous, too.
Ma!
Yes?
Ma!
See, he's coming.
Oh, Sam.
That's good.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Alone?
Uh-huh. Why, that's good. Not for Sylvia, huh?
Rosalie said alone, Molly.
All right. Not for Sylvia, not with Miss Allison.
Rosalie said alone.
All right. Come up, Rosalie.
Where are you running?
I'll go up, Jake. You tell Sammy that I know everything.
Why can't you?
It'll be easier that way, Jake. Yes?
Yes.
Come, Rosalie. Come. And Jake, darling, tell him gently.
I'll tell him gently.
Say that I'm packing if he asks where I am.
I'll say you're packing.
All right, Molly, darling, but just... Yes, please. So gently.
Pamela?
Yeah.
You spoke to Allison, Sammy?
Yes. Where's Mama?
Mama is upstairs.
Well, she has to know, Pa.
Stay where you are. Mama knows, Sammy. She knew before I knew.
What did she know? How much did she know?
She knew you wasn't on a business trip. She knew you sent a telegram. She knew the Allisons were lying. She also knew that Sylvia's brother-in-law was the one that warned her not to let you come down here in the first place.
What about Ed and Sylvia?
That I told her. The rest is up to you.
There's nothing else.
Then what are we waiting for? Why don't we...
Ma?
Yes, Jake, I'm nearly all packed. Just for you to put yourself in your valise.
I'll do it.
No. Let Papa go. Go, Jake. Pamela?
Yes, Ma.
Are we all leaving together? Are we all going home together? Huh, Pamela?
I don't love her anymore, Ma, if that's what you're asking me.
with Ruth's family.
But she loves me, Ma. Oh, I wish it was the other way around. I don't want to hurt anybody, not even her.
She hurt you, Samuel. She hurt you. And if hurting yourself, you must do it, Samuel. You must, darling. You can't marry her, Samuel.
I told Mr. Allison I wasn't going to.
Oh, you did tell Mr. Allison?
And I told Sylvia. Oh, I know I'm right. I know with all the reason I have that I shouldn't marry her. That's why I told her. And yet...
Yet what, Samuel?
Yet I feel this is the wrong way for this whole thing to end.
What do you feel, Samuel? Tell me.
I don't know.
Say it any way you can. Say it any way you can. I'll understand even if you use the wrong word.
Well, I just don't have any words. Like you don't know what to say when someone you love dies. You know what I mean, Ma? Maybe it's just foolishness, like hoping you'll wake up and find it's a dream. Maybe I'm hoping something will turn up and everything I know is true will turn out to be false. A miracle or something, huh?
Miracle? Men shouldn't call for miracles, except when nothing they can do can save them. A miracle, family, is in the hand of God. It's the hand of God stretched out to help when we no longer can have our own hand. And you, Samuel, your life is not over. What you wanted, what you dreamed, what you hoped for doesn't end and finish with Sylvia. You have your whole life yet, and you have yourself. Between them, you will find whatever your heart desires. You need no miracle, Samuel. You need only yourself. And yourself you still have. You still have yourself. Jake?
Yes.
Where are you going, family?
Upstairs.
What did you say to him, Molly?
You see.
And?
Nothing. Go up, Jake, darling, to him. Tell family what life without love can mean for a man.
That I can't tell him, Molly. That hasn't been my life. My life with you has been with love, not without it.
Whatever, Jake. Whatever, darling. Jake, dear, family's not family.
Ma!
Yes?
Here comes Sylvia.
Sylvia's coming? Oh, Jake, Sylvia's coming. Then, Jake, darling, you go upstairs.
Molly, you go up.
No, please, Jake.
Ma, please.
Go up, Jake. Don't stand. Go up to Samuel, Jake, please.
What are you going to tell her, Molly?
Maybe nothing.
Come up, Papa, darling. She'll lose your temper.
Jake, darling, please.
Please, Pa.
Please go upstairs,
Molly,
please.
Molly, please. I have a few things to tell her before I leave.
Jake, Papa, please.
Darling, please come up, Jake.
Not
I said
before
go upstairs.
I see what I have to say. You can be silent, Molly, not me.
Papa, please,
I have to
I
say
want you to go upstairs.
I want to talk to her.
Talk,
I want to tell her.
Where's Sammy? We're leaving, Sylvia.
No, Sammy. You haven't accomplished that much.
No. Well, why should Sammy stay?
Why shouldn't he? If you want him to go, that's no reason for him to leave. Why don't you say something, Mrs. Goldberg? This is a great opportunity you've always wanted. You have plenty to say. Say it. You never liked me. You never liked me when you knew nothing at all about me. When I was only someone visiting you, a stranger. You were jealous of anyone who might love you. You tried in every way you could to separate us. And now you can say I told you so. You must be very happy.
I'm not happy at all, Sylvia.
You know everything, don't you?
I always knew.
Then why don't you enjoy yourself and tell me all the things I am? Why don't you say I'm a cheat and a liar and a fraud? Why don't you run through the list and check off what I've done? Everyone else is. You hated me without reason. Now you have more reasons than someone like you needs. Why don't you say them? Go on. Say them.
The only thing I can say is that you're not for Sammy. I knew that when I first saw you, Sylvia. And not for the reasons you say. People don't live day by day with such big things. They live with small ones, little habits, little ways that I use over and over and over again every day. Things as important and plain as bread and butter. In Lastonbury, I knew that those things you didn't have. And that's why you wasn't for Sammy. You lived for yourself, for what you wanted. You couldn't see that other people had dreams. You didn't have a mind for their hopes, or an ear for their ideals, or a heart for what someone else might believe in. You didn't care that Sammy wanted to be a certain kind of a man. What you wanted was the man you would make out of him for yourself. That's how I knew. And these stories that I heard, the lies and the suffering and the pain that I found when I came here, I don't even understand them. And I don't want to. I don't care about them. That's all very noble, Mrs. Gold.
Noble or not, it's true.
I'm greatly impressed.
I'm not trying to make an impression, Sylvia. I'm just telling you that we're all going, all of us, Sammy too.
But you're still here, Mrs. Goldberg. You haven't left yet.
Molly listens and looks at Sylvia with an anxious astonishment. Sylvia is standing and waiting. That streak of willfulness in her nature which keeps flooding to the surface appears again. What can she do?
Every day, as the war against Japan increases in intensity, the need for waste fats and greases grows more critical. Here's one department where the enemy may be superior unless you help make up the difference from your kitchens. Save all waste fats and greases, no matter how discolored. Keep a clean can in which to strain them and take them regularly to your butcher. Remember, for every pound, he'll give you 4 cents plus 2 extra meat points.
Take those of us who like to start each day off with piping hot Lipton tea. Why, nothing in the world could change us. In fact, breakfast just wouldn't be breakfast without Lipton's. Lipton tea just seems to go with a bright bowl of gay yellow jonquils, a sunny checked gingham tablecloth, and, of course, the morning paper. Part of the reason is Lipton's deep amber color and tempting aroma. But the big reason breakfast wouldn't be right without Lipton's is Lipton's grand, brisk flavor. It's so lively and tingling with zip. Just a cup or two of Lipton's and your spirits catch on and your day's off to a bright start. Yes, breakfast time or any time is the right time to enjoy Lipton tea. So for real tea-drinking pleasure, ask your grocer tomorrow for brisk Lipton tea.
Now for our story. Lefty Larkin had come to a decision. As he got into the farm pickup truck this morning and headed towards Wakefield, he knew exactly what he was going to do. In the back of his mind, there was the thought that Aunt Mary wouldn't approve of his plan. But this didn't deter Lefty, for he was firmly convinced that she was wrong about Sergeant Bill Meade. Adding up what seemed to him conclusive evidence, Bill gave Lefty's character a grade of 0. And he knew from his conversation with Peggy Douglas this morning that Aunt Mary had been misled by her niece's attitude. It was quite clear to him that Peggy hadn't given up hope about Bill. Lefty hadn't told Aunt Mary of his discovery of Peggy's change of mind. He was going to handle this situation himself. When he got to the town square, Lefty Larkin parked the car and, entering the farmer's bank, walked over to David Bowman's desk.
Hello there, Lefty.
Good morning, David. Are you rest for time, or may I talk to you for a minute?
Certainly. Things are a little slack this morning. Come on in, Lefty. I had planned to come by and see you people last night, but, well, I got bogged down with a lot of work. Going to be busy this evening?
No, I wish you would come by.
How's Mary?
Fine.
Oh, by the way, I got a card from Randy this morning.
Oh? Well, that's swell.
I thought I'd phone Mary and tell her. She hasn't heard for quite a while now, has she?
No, but you know how it is. Mail from overseas can be pretty erratic at times. Phone her, David. She doesn't say much, but I know she'll be relieved. Huh. What did Randy say?
Not much. Just that he was feeling very fit and still hadn't given up hope of getting home soon. He told me to keep a sharp eye on his family.
Well, it needs one.
Oh?
Yeah.
What's the trouble?
David, I'm worried about Peggy.
What's the matter with her?
She'd be perfectly all right if she were let alone. But she's so darn gullible, David, and trusting. Bill Meade keeps on a perpetual seesaw.
What?
Yeah. I think I have the setup all right, but... Well, I thought maybe you might know something. David, what do you think of Bill Meade?
Well, Lefty, I don't know the young man too well. He's been to see me a couple of times, and he's talked to me quite confidentially. I'd say that he's a young man who has his troubles, all right.
Well, I don't see that that excuses him from making trouble for other people.
I'm afraid I don't quite follow you.
David, how can I sit back and let this happen to Peggy when I know...
Lefty, wait a minute. Don't start giving me an argument before I know what it's all about.
You know Kit's leaving town?
Yes.
Do you know why?
Lefty, you know I don't enjoy my niece's confidence.
Well, there's something peculiar going on, and I'd certainly like to get to the bottom of it. David, the other day Bill came to see Peggy. He told her he was going to get a divorce from Kit.
Oh?
Yeah, that's what he said. It seems he found out how dishonest Kit had been with him. He gave Peggy a lot of talk about how he'd known all along his marriage was a mistake, and he wanted some kind of commitment from Peggy. She wouldn't give him one.
Actually, she couldn't under the circumstances.
And I, the prize fool, went to Bill. Oh, I don't know what I was thinking of, David. But I knew Peggy still loved him, and, well, if this marriage of his was wrong, if there was any chance for the two youngsters, well, I spilled everything to Bill. I told him I felt he could count on Peggy. Then he told me he wasn't going to get a divorce. Last night he came by and told Peggy that. No explanation, nothing.
That doesn't sound like Bill.
I think it sounds exactly like him. I think we've all been mistaken in that young man. Oh, it isn't the divorce that's important. Lord knows, I hope he never gets one. But it's what he's doing to Peggy.
Well, how does she feel about it?
That's what I don't quite understand. Aunt Mary told me last night that she said she was through with him, that she'd seen the last of him and seen him for what he was. But this morning, after breakfast, I was talking to her and trying to help her, and, well, she resented everything I said about Bill. She came into town last night after he'd left, and I have a feeling that she may have seen him, David. That's the only way I can account for her change of mind.
It's not a very pleasant problem, is it?
Not only that, it's one that can't be solved. So it's one that should be ended.
Well... Evidently, Ben Calvert feels much the same way as you.
What are you talking about?
Ben was in to see me. He's as distressed about Kit as you are about Peggy.
Oh? What did he have to say?
He wanted to know if I knew what was going on. He seems to think that his daughter's leaving town because... Well, because she and Bill are having trouble over Peggy.
Oh, he does he?
Well, you know Ben.
You bet I know Ben. And I know just where he'd put the blame. I know exactly where he'd put Peggy, and I'm not going to have her involved in anything like that. I don't know what Bill's up to, whether he's playing two ends against the middle or not, but I know he's not going to string Peggy along.
Lefty, I think you may be doing Bill some injustice.
All I know is that he can't have any respect for Peggy and act the way he has. And I know that no good will ever come of it for her. She seems to be in a state of mind where he could influence her, get her to believe anything.
Isn't that an assumption on your part?
No, I don't think so. If you'd talked to her this morning as I did, I think you'd agree with me. So Ben Calvert thinks that Peggy is to blame.
Look, Lefty, probably you don't know all of the ramifications to this mix-up any more than I do. Things like this are always unpleasant. But Peggy, Bill, and Kit... Well, they aren't babies anymore. Maybe they have to work it out their own way.
Yeah, that'd be all right if Bill were dependable and honest and a gentleman.
Well, your feeling against the boy is very understandable at the moment, but it may be a little harsh. I don't know what you're contemplating, but my unasked-for advice is that you let things alone for a while.
Well, I have a right to correct a mistake, certainly.
What do you mean?
I'm the one who went to Bill and told him Peggy still loved him. I can't undo that, but I can certainly protect her now.
What are you going to do?
The only thing I can do.
Is that the only answer I'm going to get?
I'm afraid so, David.
Does Mary know?
No. But certainly I have a right to assume some responsibility. David, I just can't sit by and... I'm her father.
I know. But no one else knows it. You've never claimed that right, Lefty.
Well, I'm claiming it now.
I think I see why you stopped to talk to me this morning. You really didn't want my advice. There's some doubt in your mind. You really just wanted to argue with yourself.
Maybe so. And if that's true, the doubt's gone, David. I've won my own argument. See you tonight, maybe.
Lefty Larkin got up and walked out of the bank, leaving a very distressed David Bowman. It wasn't so much Lefty's interference that worried David as his attitude. He was aware that Lefty was angry and belligerent. And from long experience, David knew only too well the possible results of such a mood. Knew that his desire to protect Peggy might lead him to do the rash, the ill-advised thing. But Mr. Bowman would have been more alarmed if he had seen where Lefty went after leaving the bank. He went across the square to a building that bore the legend Calvert Real Estate and Loan Company.
Well, good morning, Mr. Larkin.
Hello, Miss Ward.
I haven't seen you in a long time. How's everything at the farm?
Is Mr. Calvert in?
Why, yes, I think he's talking on the phone at the moment. Is there anything I can do for you?
No, thanks. I want to see Ben himself.
Well, I'll tell him you're here. May I ask what you wanted to see him about?
You may. Tell him I want to see him about his son-in-law, Bill Meade.
Jessie Ward completely lost her composure for a moment. She started, obviously, and then hurried into Ben's office. A moment later, the door was opened again, and Lefty was shown in. Ben Calvert stood behind his desk. The two men stand facing each other. Two men who haven't spoken to each other in years. Two men who, at this moment, have one thing in common: to ensure the future happiness of their daughters.
It's wonderful how simple cooking is these days. When I was a girl, my mother used to spend a good many hours making a pot of noodle soup. But now, we have Lipton's Noodle Soup Mix. When you use Lipton's, you just empty the contents of the package into boiling water, and in no time at all, soup's on. And what delicious chickeny-tasting soup it is. Yes, Lipton's has an old-fashioned homemade flavor, and it's brim-full of tender golden egg noodles. Of course, sometimes it's hard to get in some stores these days, but there's lots of good things scarce in wartime. So, folks, don't forget to ask for Lipton's Noodle Soup.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY with an episode of the radio drama Aunt Mary. We also heard an episode of The Goldbergs, first broadcast on radio on May 21st, 1941. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows. On the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at this same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.